story of Shmuel Shapira. Run, so Shmuel Shapira, the 260 people, they're all right now in the hotel, up on top, the third floor, locked in.
In Uman.
In Uman. When only 60 of them need to stay there, and the Russians are not letting the other 200 stay. And there's a big balagan, and it's Rosh Hashanah is getting very close. And there, and then.
So, like, this is late afternoon?
Yes. The Russians were hurt to the depth of their souls.
Good.
And they got very upset. What's this? And there were people were afraid that they might force they'll break in and force them to drive on Yom Tov to Vinitsa. They don't care. But Rav Lezer Bell on Shlita, he started making phone calls. There was phones over there to all the countries and to diplomats and this and that. There's a lot of pressure going on. And now. That was good for Gorbachev. He wants to show the world how he's not such a communist. He's a little bit of a socialist also, and this and that. That was good, so...
And at that time, there was a lot of balagan because of the breakup of the Warsaw Pact.
Yeah.
And also followed a few more...
And also, there's another thing. In Russian, you know how to say diplomatic pressure? It's called rubles. It's also diplomatic pressure. So... A lot of rubles went through hands over there in the right places until the Russians decided that it's very important for the Russians that 260 Hasidim will spend Rosh Hashanah in Uman because of Rabbi Nachman of Brest.
What's the term, bakshish?
Bakshish, that's in Arabic. Right before the Chag came the order from the topest place, from Gorbachev himself, let the Yidden stay.
That's incredible.
So fine. Now that this problem was solved, there was another problem. They were all staying in the third floor of this hotel. The other floors were locked. There's no beds, no mattresses, there's no food. I don't know, half an hour before Chag. So they took all the keys they had, started scraping them, made them thinner, put them in, and opened the other doors, broke through the other doors of the hotel, took mattresses, took stuff out so they could have where to sleep. It wasn't enough, so they took mattresses that were made out of two of pep, and they cut them in half, and they had two now. Anyways, that was a big thing. The most atheist country in the world subdued to the Kedusha. And Rosh Hashanah, they had Tashlich. So before going to Tashlich, so Rav Berlan went into Rav Shmuel Shapira's room, and Rav Shmuel saw him, and he says, Rav Lezer, with your zchut, we're all here. Ashrecha, that you kad Hashem Shamayim, and we're all married to be here. And for a long time, he was praising Abdullah. You know, there were hundreds of Hasidim on Rosh Hashanah afternoon with the Kitlach and the Shtraimalach walking down the streets of Uman towards the river to do Tashlich. With the white and everything. Who are these doctors, they wondered? Who are these doctors? They didn't know why they're all wearing white. Yeah. And then, Rav Eliezer of Berlan, Rabbi Yitzchak David Grossman, he started giving shiurim over there. And then at the end of Rosh Hashanah, they were dancing for a long time. And then there was a miracle. Shmuel Shapira, which couldn't move, as you remember, sitting in a wheelchair, he was crying from joy. And then suddenly, he couldn't sit. He got up, And he started dancing with everyone. Because the guy couldn't move. He had Parkinson, like in the last stage before you die. People were shocked. Right? He held Rabbi Chodolfman's hands from one hand, one side, and Moshe Burstein, all Zatzal. On the other hand, for 15 minutes he danced. After that's 65.
That's incredible.
It's beyond.
For Parkinson's, that's incredible.
It's the first time that, yeah, all these people, they saw it, the power of will, you could dance. Even if your body doesn't dance anymore. For years after, for days, a long time after, when we were talking about this, that he danced. So it was Rabbeinu himself. So they asked him, who asked him? And people asked him, how'd you dance? He said, telling you, it wasn't me. It was Rabbeinu himself dancing me. It wasn't me dancing. I don't know how I danced. Right after Rosh Hashanah, they were all thrown out of the Ukraine, of course, as soon as possible. So now, on the way to the airport, on the way to the airplane, they wheeled up Shmuel, right? Of course, and it was very difficult because every movement is giving a lot of pain, everything. So you need someone who knows how to wheel them down these little places, the alleys, and all kinds of things. So one of the Katsin Bitachon over there, one of the Russians, he said, you want me to ask one of the stewardess to wheel him? So they tried to explain, he's a very holy man. He can't take that a stewardess will touch his wheel, his handle of the wheels, and she'll wheel him down, he's a holy man. So the Russian said, such a holy man, this Russian atheist, Russian guy, such a holy man. I'll have the honor to wheel him down. And he wheeled into the... So, they landed in Israel. And once they landed, Shmo turned to his sons and said, okay, I want a taxi now to Meron. This is his man who's dying. I want a taxi to Meron. So they said, what, are you crazy? You're such a thing, you're crazy? Now you want to go to Meron after all this trip that you went through? For a long time, they're trying to convince him. This, that. Shmo didn't say a word. So they took him to Yerushalayim. Motzei Shabbos, he called his son on Mendel. He said, I know you're playing games with me. Now, either you have to order a taxi for me right now, or I'm going to find my way there myself. So they had no choice. They ordered the taxi. And they took him to Meron. Actually, it looked like it gave him power to live more. The fact that this whole long trip that they went through. He had more koyach, more strength than before he left.
Was it okay with Israel when he went?
With the country?
Yeah.
Why not?
I don't know. They just said there were problems with, Russia allowing people in. So.
Now, here was official. It was the official trip. 1989, Breslov lost three of the biggest tzaddikim in the generation of the heads of Breslov. Reb Shmuel Shapira, and afterwards Reb Binyamin Zev Cheshkin, that we said is your side, and Reb Levi Yitzchak Bender at the end of the year, Tammuz. Reb Shmuel always lived, as if anyone remembers from the beginning of the book, what's the romantic sentence he told his wife when they got home after the wedding. He lied on the floor with his legs to the door and told his wife, I have to remember, at the end they'll lead us like this out of the door, referring to the last day. It's very romantic of him to stand out of the wedding, but that's how he lived his whole life. That's how he lived his whole life.
He lied on the floor with his legs pointed out?
Yeah, that's...
He lived his whole life that way?
He lived his whole life, lived with that feeling that we're preparing ourselves for the last day in the world. Always living like that. So when they asked him, you're not afraid of the last day? Of the death? So what does it make a difference? If Hashem wants me here, I'll be here. Wants me there, I'll be there. Wherever Hashem wants me to be. Truth is, a lot of times when people are afraid of death is because they're afraid of the end. It's the end. But if we believe, we know that's the end. End of what? It's not the end. And Hashem is endless. It's part of Hashem. You have to be afraid of. Here or you there. What's the big difference? Whatever Hashem wants, he can do with you. Whatever Hashem does is good. He does it here, he does it here, he does it there, he does it there, whatever he does.